Fergiad Mila Fotirov Gidi on Say a Song Project Lumsa Thurney Hawkon. I'm a musician and a broadcaster, and I am on a one-woman mission up and down this country to meet some of Ireland's top writers and Shannos artists to find out more about the Shannos tradition. Oscar Ilge, when we ask someone to sing a song, we say Aber Auron, say a song. The words and the story are the most important thing. Now, if you are unfamiliar with the Shannos song tradition, it literally means songs in the old style. This tradition is as old as the hills. It goes back as far as we do, where people narrated their lives, times of great sadness and joy, through the medium of songs. These are songs that were composed and transmitted orally and passed down through time as generations of singers and poets alike made their own of them. It was and is a very sophisticated art form. And what I am interested in finding out is what it can tell us about life in Ireland today. To do that, I'm going to meet with some of Ireland's best poets and singers. I want to learn more about these songs, and this week to do that, I'll be meeting with Nigerian Irish poet Dagogo Hart. But before then, I'm going to meet an old friend of mine, Nelni Cronin. She is one of my all-time favourite singers, and there's no better woman to tell me all about Máirvuini Laoghaire's epic Cathaoirleach. Constantu nov nel.
Tam anva, gremil wagat, Constantu se.
Anva her fads. Is fada on arch nuktu nor dernach.
I know, that's a good hunter now good made a dante gale reach.
Shane. Well, diagnosis of being clachter a gringer a goaluder a gale le brain fan equal, but Tamid Anna serious enough now to appear in the Havrowan.
Ta kurmi led in the let to a twee.
Shane. Ta mead a kind enough me aller kache minia. Cadé an chiadorgar arís an tarán sin an cuinat?
Well, it's stóchan ar vísa fás at ís, tá muintir na háta muintir bhíl a hongwérig an a vúrálachas an tarán agus an a vúrálachas Máirvuini Laoghaire.
You're talking about Ballingarry there, which is the parish where you come from, in the Muscarí Gaeltacht.
Yeah.
Was that also where Máirvuí was from?
Yeah, so she would have been from the parish of Ballingarry. Caymania is only a couple of miles away from the village of Ballingarry. Growing up, you know, I always heard of Máirvuini Laoghaire. Locally, people are very proud of her work. You know, it's a really powerful piece of writing, even before you sing it, if just as a piece of poetry. I mean, it's really, really powerful.
I know, it's mad to think that a woman could be such a social and political commentator, and that obviously the power of her words lives on.
So the Battle of Caymanaigh happened in 1822. Again, it makes me, as a local woman, very proud of her, the fact that she was a woman and that she couldn't read or write. You know, that she managed to portray this really powerful story and that it was passed on orally. Because without that, I don't know how many more accounts we would have of the battle. Now, I know she maybe over-exaggerated a little bit in the song, but it's great that we have it this many years on. You know, I'm sure there were other women around that time as well. You know, Eileen Duvney Cunnell was probably composing as well. And who knows, there could have been lots of other women composing that we might not be aware of, but the fact that her words live on is great.
It's a real sign of respect for her work as well, you know, that through the selection of different songs, and so many songs have died out in the last 200 years, that is still, it's kind of a jewel in the repertoire.
Definitely. And the fact that she wasn't holding back, I think, makes it even more special, you know. She wasn't trying to be PC in what she was saying. She was very direct, very to the point, very close to the bone, and you can really get the emotion that she feels and the, you know, how strongly she felt on a lot of political issues. People aren't maybe as direct these days, you know, you have to be careful and mind your P's and Q's.
Yeah.
But back then, no bothered her. Great. We should all be a bit more like Máirvuí.
Absolutely. The Battle of Caymanaigh, who fought in that?
So it was na Buachaillí Bán, or the White Boys locally. You know, at that time, I suppose there was a lot of issues with landlords, with rents, with people being evicted from their homes. And back then, I suppose if you were evicted, you really had nowhere to go. Like, you'd kind of basically meant, you know, you were coming to the end of your days, because, you know, you couldn't just, you know, check in with someone else. Maybe you could for a while, but, you know, times were really, really tough. So there was kind of an uprising where people kind of took matters into their own hands and just decided enough is enough. And so the Buachaillí Bána, they went to Bantry and they raided some arms and some ammunition. I suppose Lord Bantry was in Bantry at the time. So they would ransack a lot of wealthier people and try and gather some ammunition. So Lord Bantry wasn't too impressed, so he sent a troop of soldiers back over towards Caymania to kind of stand their ground. But the battle wasn't as big as Mara Wee portrays it. There wasn't that many casualties. Now, there was, after the battle, a lot of men were hanged for their part in it. Captain Smith, of course, was an English captain. He was killed, and a couple of more locals. Yeah, they were just standing up for what was, they were really being totally wronged, you know? Mm. So they had to take matters into their own hands.
Well, I mean, you couldn't but become familiar with that story and not think, you know, 200 years later that whether it's the white boys fighting for the rights of the tenant farmer or if you're putting on Clareburn in the morning, it's nearly the same conversation that we're having all the time.
That's the very truth of it. Yeah, people are still dealing with these kind of struggles and yeah, it's totally unfair, really, you know? And it's not as easy as grabbing a few guns or pitchforks and uprising.
You wouldn't get away with that, right?
You couldn't, you see. No, but, yeah, but, you know, back then, I suppose, people had the strength in numbers and they had, they were sick of it, I suppose. And times were different. Times were different. Mm. It really is a sad time of the times that, it is still kind of happening today.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
Vulture funds and all this kind of stuff is, it's, we're still talking about it, you know?
It's mad, isn't it?
Mm.
Mara Wee herself, as we would say, Vichy Gustaloch, I don't know, could you say that she came from a wealthy or kind of well-off background, but by the end, I know after Caymany, it kind of marked a change in her own look. Her sons were imprisoned afterwards. Am I right in saying that?
Have
I?
Yeah, her sons were imprisoned and her brother as well. So she saw all this firsthand, you know.
Yeah.
She saw people around her being evicted. Also, I think she saw the Buachalí Bána, the white boys, when they were training. So she could see all this and she could see the impact it was having on people locally. Obviously, you'd be really driven to change things. And in her case, I suppose this song is where she got her venom out, I suppose, and tried to, lads agree it, to kind of encourage others to, you know, put their foot down and, you know, that this could have and should have been avoided, you mm-hmm. know, that yeah. people were well within their rights to be living in the houses they were in. They were locals living in the local land and working the local land.
Just trying to survive.
Trying to survive. And just, it just really wasn't fair.
She herself was evicted then from her land towards the end of her life.
That's right. Herself and her husband. Luckily for Mara Wee, you know, Irish was her first language and she wrote these songs and her compositions were all Oscailge. Because if, when you translate them, if the people that were evicting her knew exactly what she was saying, she would have been evicted a long time before that. You know?
Yeah.
So in one way it was, you know, it was great that she could be as passionate in her work.
This obviously isn't her only piece of Filiochta that she composed.
She's sung obviously really heavy or I suppose big songs, but she's also composed some lovely lighthearted songs as well, you know. Avurkach Vion Game, Madinvach or Labig Vig is another lovely song that she composed. So she had a great range in her compositions. And again, like we said, for somebody who couldn't read or write, it's just mind-blowing now when you think of it that this many years on, that we're still singing her songs, you know?
I wonder what she would have made that 200 years later we'd be talking about her songs, saying how significant they were, but we'd still have the same problems.
I know.
She could depressed. Write
she could write another couple of songs, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Please God, in 200 years anyway, things have changed.
Yeah.
They say that, don't you? You really have to put yourself into the song.
Yeah.
What's your artistic process? You get very academic and pretentious about it.
And I suppose I've been singing this song a good while and you form a kind of a connection with the song when you know the background of the story and you've set foot in the places that she's talking about and you've grown up there. When I sing the song, like, really I just try and let her words paint the picture, you know?
You mentioned there about picturing the landscape. Is that, it is a real thing. You know, you're a Muskerry woman, so I'm never going to catch you singing a Donegal song or a Connemara song. And is that, because, well, obviously the dialect and stuff is one aspect of it, but I suppose, would you think that you'd find it harder to root yourself in those songs to picture that landscape?
Like a singer, I think, definitely has to have a connection to a song. Whether that is researching more about the song or going to visit the place where it happened or doing more research on the person who composed it. You have to, you can't sing a song as well if you just look at the words and just sing it, you know. Mm. You have to kind of go deeper into it, I think.
You have to become emotionally involved.
Yes. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, well, I always remember you singing this song on stage with Cuirní Riada, and it was great.
Well, it's one of them songs that you can kind of belt out, like you can really put your life and soul into it, you know?
Yeah.
When you're comfortable, obviously, singing it, it's a hard song to try and sing it properly. Not saying that I do, that I sing it properly. There's plenty of other singers that do a great job of it. Patty Feig, I think, does the nicest version I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
A great singer from Musgrí.
This is such a weighty song, as you said, but it's very seldom that you get the weighty song from the perspective of the woman. Sometimes you would hear that as a criticism of a song, you know, that's a man's song, she shouldn't be singing that. But I've never heard anyone say about Cathy Amini, well, that's a woman's song.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be singing that.
Yeah, that's true. I know that's an argument a lot of people have. Or they might say like that a song would be too gorshul for a woman to be singing. But I wouldn't agree with either. I think if a man can do it, a woman can do it too.
Oh, well, I'm sure Maura, we would definitely agree with that.
Definitely would. And I'm sure she'd be absolutely thrilled that women are singing her songs, you know.
Well, do you know what? Maybe the Tennant has a long way to go to gain some more power in the world. But the women, thanks be to God, that's changed an awful lot.
Yeah. Well, like a woman like Maura Bhuí really is like, she's iconic, really. When you think about it, what she achieved, she really is a great role model for us all.
We have such a long line of poets in Ireland, but there's so many female voices belong to the oral tradition as opposed to the literary tradition.
Yeah.
And because of that, maybe their work isn't as well known as their male counterparts. So that's why it's important to keep singing these songs.
Definitely.
Anyway, Nell, go on. Tordun Cathy Amini.
Okay, bit of a tree lass. Cosháin glan chéime in ivléir a vinte mar dean an fias an ihe chan siar chal sol machnav sial am fénig Dianov must wait against the Guile Labin Ronion. Nor a Hualam Hatacht near is Glorn Nachtacht Lafwem an arm de chrihan shliav is near vending an glor an adar gud naud ver mar hiukuch gar de dechon ebni is chua Machrin sarir dagder gantror.
When you think Dublin literary tradition, one of the first places that comes to mind has to be Bewley's Cafe, right in the middle of Grafton Street. They do a great scone and there's a great atmosphere and ambiance there, so I think it's particularly suitable for me to go and meet one of the rising stars of the spoken word scene here in Ireland, Dagogo Hart. I want to hear all about what he thought of Maura Bhuí Ní Laoire's Cathy Amini. Dagogo, you might tell us where we are.
We are in Bewley's Cafe. Upstairs, rented out the whole space for me. Thank you very much.
Listen, this is a big budget production. You're involved with this institution.
I am, yeah. I recently got on the board for the Cafe Theatre, which is just behind us there. It's been interesting. I've only been to one meeting, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a new venture.
Yeah, it's a new venture, but it's fun. It's interesting. Never been on a board before. A lot of voting and stuff, which is quite cool.
You're doing an awful lot of very exciting work at the minute.
Yes.
Maybe you can tell us what's on the cards for this year without giving away too much.
I mean, a lot of it will be under my collective We Are Grail, because we rebranded and relaunched this year. So there's a lot of new ventures under that. Poetry Slam, which we normally run like every 3 to 4 months, sometimes only twice a year, to be honest with you. Now it's a lot more regular. We got a deal with a venue, so it's going to be every month, which is nice. Yeah, so Talkatives will be the main one. It's going to take a lot of my time, but as the year like unfolds, we have a lot of things that are coming that I can't say yet. But there's a lot of things coming under We Are Grey here in terms of like live performances, online performances, and just like social media content specifically centered around like poetry and stuff like that. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we might as well get into the nitty gritty of the poetry. When we first met, you were telling me about coming to Ireland. Mm. Maybe you can give us a little bit of a background first before we start.
It feels like a lifetime ago because I've been here 14 years this year and I left when I was 16. So it's almost like 50-50 now.
Yeah.
It's getting to that stage. But yeah, I came to study medicine, was in IT Tralee for a year, studied pharmacy instead. Pharmacy gave me the opportunity to, you know, pursue this writing thing that I started in college. We started with like page poetry, and then I started doing slams in Dublin and just kind of like progressed and spiraled from there into whatever you want to call it, this is that I'm doing now. So yeah, it's quite interesting, yeah.
I suppose there's a great new wave of very exciting Black and Irish writers that are coming to the fore.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When I think of that, you know, your voice is one of the most prominent in my mind anyway.
Thank you.
Maybe you can tell me a little bit about that scene in Dublin and in Ireland at the minute.
It's quite interesting, actually, because like my collective, We Are Grey Yo, it was initially me and Felicia, obviously, Feli Speaks, and then Samuel Yakura joined in, and we're all like Black Irish writers, specifically Nigerian descent. And we didn't think it would be what it is today in terms of we just wanted to start something which we could use like as an umbrella to like do more of the stuff we liked doing. It's given us the opportunity to start mentoring, not necessarily directly mentoring, but like indirectly mentoring young Black and Irish writers to like come behind us and like, look, this is possible, you know? And it's not like we work exclusively with Black writers. Some of our colleagues that work a lot with like Emmett O'Brien, Poet Jeff and the like, we always work very well together, but it's always nice to see that like representation of what it could be.
Well, it's very exciting because
yes.
It opens the gates for so many new voices.
Exactly.
When I emailed you about this project, about the channels, did you think I was a mad woman?
I mean, my first thought was, I only speak English. How is this going to work? yeah. And then you explained everything and it was calm. But yeah. It was definitely an interesting prospect, especially because you came at a time where, I think I said this to you, I was trying to switch up from writing, I don't want to say non-violent, but like a lot more passive forms of violence.
Mm.
You came at a time where I was thinking of writing something like raw and tapping into anger and that side of myself and those kind of emotions. And you brought this poem where you're like, well, this is violence.
Yeah, I know.
Like, yes, this is exactly what I was looking for.
So then you dove into the world of Mar of We Ní Laoire.
Yeah.
What were your initial thoughts of her?
Well, I think my first thought was the bravery, but then being able to like channel the emotion of like grief and loss and anger and feeling all those things and still channeling it into writing such a beautiful piece. I mean, it's much longer than what I wrote, much, much longer. And being able to channel all those things into like a piece of writing that can, one, outlive you, but also inspire generations to come, literally like hundreds of years down the line and hopefully thousands of years down the line. I think that's one of the things I found quite interesting.
Was that your first foray into Irish language kind of world?
Yes, 100%. Yes. I mean, living in Cork for 4 years, you kind of like encounter it a little bit, but not to the same extent. Like this one was different. This one I was diving like head in. Especially because a lot of the places she was mentioning was like literally around Cork where I lived for 4 years. I'm like, oh, wow, this is quite interesting. Like I'm familiar with Macroom. Yeah, that's great.
But yeah. It's funny, things can be quite serendipitous like that, aren't they? Me and you both probably come from the same generation of young Irish people that are trying to deal with the whole housing crisis. What I'm fascinated about with Mara Vuí's story and the story of Caithre Minia is that you're literally going back 200 years.
Yeah.
And we're still dealing with
landlords.
Oh my God, it's mad, isn't it? The plague of Irish society. Were you kind of struck by that?
I mean, the landlord conversation is, it's a weird one because attributed a lot to the conversation about immigration, because it's kind of like, how do you own land? Like, what does it mean to be a landlord? Mm. We've drawn lines in the sand and we're like, this little patch of sand here, this little patch of dirt here belongs to me. And if you cross those lines, but like, what are you doing with the piece of dirt? I'm just trying to wrap my head around it. Like, how do you own land? Like, I understand having a house, like a roof over your head and home for you and your family. Mm. But if you have 2 acres of land that you decide, I've drawn the lines in the sand here, this little thing here belongs to me, and I'm one man, no matter how big you are, probably like 120 kilos, 7 foot tall, like you still can't stretch across like 2 acres of land.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same conversation with immigration. Like, yeah, yeah.
That's funny because I've actually been thinking about this as well, I suppose, with all the questions in the world at the minute. It is such a valid question. And what I have read a couple of times online that resonates with me is, you know, I don't own land. The land, to a certain extent, owns me, my identity.
Exactly. If you zoom out far enough, the earth is like a tiny marble. Mm. It's nothing too special. It's nothing too special. Like, if there are aliens, they probably can't see the continents, like the demarcations that we have. And these are natural demarcations. These aren't like someone drawing lines on. So I find the whole thing weird. Like, there's 7 billion people on this earth, but if you put everybody together, like shoulder to shoulder, we'll all probably fit in Dublin.
Mm. Like, well, there you go,
like,
yeah.
This, the effect of drawing these lines in the sand is much more than, you know, what's happening inside of this circle that we've drawn, because it's impacting things that are outside the circle. Mm. Like, think about the colonization and the long-term effect of that. Or think about, like, the fact that let's call them great world powers, like the United States and Great Britain, and the impact these are nations, what is a nation, line in the sand, the impact these nations are having. I don't want to go too political, but like, yeah. The impact these nations are having across the pond in places like Africa and South Asia. And yeah, it's...
Does this colour everything? Does this notion of drawing lines in the sand and nations and otherness, you know, we are separate from these
exactly.
people. Does that colour everything that you do?
It does. It comes up a lot.
Yeah.
It comes up a lot. That and masculinity, I think, are my big, like, or my biggest topics that I like to write on or touch on. Mm. I mean, it's something I'm probably still struggling with in terms of, like, I don't have the answers. Mm. Like, is the answer to open everywhere? Is the answer to, you know, like, I don't have the answers. And it's something I'm still, like, struggling with. But I know the way we have it just doesn't work. I mean, we can see the impact. It doesn't work.
Well, it's funny because I think, you know, especially at the end of this poem, that really comes up when you list all these countries.
Exactly.
And we realise that everything that happened here in the past happened in a lot of other places.
Yeah, and even apart from zooming out in terms of space, if you zoom out in terms of time, like, in 500 years, the land that is owned by one person is probably not going to be owned by that family anymore. And then if you even go further in, like, 10,000 years, that land probably is infertile and no one wants to be there, and we're all living on the ground because we killed, like, the ozone and the environment is destroyed. Like, the idea of legacy and trying to, like, leave things behind. There's this quote I heard recently, which is like, if you have a bad son, there's no point leaving him an inheritance because you ruin everything. And if you have a good son, there's no point leaving him an inheritance because he's going to get his own. Yeah. So regardless of what you do, there's no point, like, trying to, like, accumulate as much, because once you die, it's all messed up anyway. Yeah.
Maybe the only thing worthwhile leaving behind you, like Marla, we did, is...
Exactly.
Verse.
It's education.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I like the Tishkent Gerhanmerer. I don't know how you say that in English. I like the common ground that we found at the end of this. I think it's a good note to end on.
Thank you. How dare they sleep? As if we are not competent. As if they do not owe us flesh and blood. How dare they play in death? As if they did not come at night. As if they did not teach us the way of silence and starlight. How dare they dream? As if yesterday was not a fairy tale. As if they did not leave behind undead roots. And we, an army of Amalekites cascading down from heaven's gates into hell. Let the devil know we have arrived. Children of the God. Orphans of war turned fathers of freedom. We will come like they did. Clamoring from the east for Abala. With God on our side, we will buy our freedom. For
for the blood is holy and the sacrifice is divine. We will take the river, albeit soaked in blood. We will take the earth, albeit scorched and burnt. For one day, the sun will rise in the east, and the rain shall return to Iran. Our children shall be born to the sweet voices of the birds, the rush of the river Glenkeen in Ular, where the deer go at night for sweet slumber, and they will sing songs of us. The rock heights of Kamani, O sweet boys from Mill Street to Makroom, let our voices travel as far as our stories. Let the world know we did not accept peace and chains, that we never will. Let this be a cry for us, a cry for Abagana, a new beginning, a cry for Jordan, a river soaked in blood waiting, a cry for Rohingya, Ethiopia, Congo, Colombia, Ukraine, Somalia, South Africa, Libya, North Korea, Syria, Yemen, India, Palestine, Nigeria, Ireland. Freedom calls. Answer.
That was Dagogo Heart's interpretation of Máirfuinní Laoghaire's epic Caithfé Mhinne. Smisead Dearnaí Chlocán, and the Say a Song project was produced by Donna Productions for RTE Radio 1 and was supported by Commission the Man. This programme brings us to the end of our series, but you can listen back to all episodes on the RTE Radio app.
This programme was presented and produced by Dearnaí Chlocán and edited by Fergal Sachs in Radio na Liffey. Arnavuinu e Commission the Man, Leshantolia Kadunish Television.